Peace be upon you. So in the book of Proverbs, chapter 16, verse 16, we read, "How much better to get wisdom than gold, to get insight rather than silver." And we see this sentiment echoed in the Quran. In Surah 2, verse 269, it says, "He, God, bestows wisdom upon whomever he chooses, and whoever attains wisdom has attained a great bounty. Only those who possess intelligence will take heed." Now in the Quran, we have numerous examples where we see that someone who has wisdom, knowledge, understanding, that they're able to outflank someone who has status, power, wealth. So God willing, let's look at some of these examples in the Quran to show the value of knowledge. In the first example, we have Solomon. Solomon was blessed and tested with vast material wealth and legions of jinns, humans, and birds at his disposal. In Surah 27, verse 17, it reads, "Mobilized in the service of Solomon were his obedient soldiers of jinns and humans, as well as the birds, all at his disposal." One day, while Solomon was doing roll call, he noticed one of the birds was missing. And this reads in Surah 27, verse 20 through 21, it says, "He inspected the birds and noted, 'Why do I not see the hopu? Why is he missing? I will punish him severely or sacrifice him unless he gives me a good excuse.'" So in this dynamic, it's very clear that Solomon has the authority, that if he wished, he could sacrifice this poor bird and the bird has no say in the matter. Yet what happens when the hopu reveals himself? All of a sudden, we see the power dynamics shift. In Surah 27, verse 22, it reads, "He did not wait for long. The hopu said, 'I have news that you do not have. I've brought to you from Sheba some important information.'" So despite Solomon's higher status, that he's the king, he's the ruler, he can decide, you know, to sacrifice his hopu or not, all of a sudden when the hopu explains to him that he has information that Solomon is not privy to, all of a sudden the power dynamics shift. And now, rather than Solomon being in the driver's seat, he's actually at the mercy of this bird, this defenseless bird that he was contemplating sacrificing 2 minutes ago. So despite, in a worldly sense, you know, Solomon is the king, he's the ruler, in this dynamic, the bird was in charge. The bird was the one who is dictating the terms, and Solomon had to go along with it if he wanted to have what the bird had, which was information, showing that despite all the vast material wealth, all the legions that Solomon had, the hopu had something that Solomon did not, which was information. And we see this concept of knowledge over bronze occur again. After Solomon sends, you know, the correspondence with the Queen of Sheba, and they're anticipating their arrival, he requests from his, you know, elders, "Which one can bring me the Queen of Sheba's palace the fastest?" And what we're told is the Afrit. An Afrit is a powerful jinn. He claimed that he could bring the queen's palace before Solomon is able to stand up. And this is read in Surah 27, verse 38 and 39. He said, "O you elders, which of you can bring me her mansion before they arrive here as submitters?" One Afrit, so a powerful jinn, from the jinn said, "I can bring it to you before you stand up. I am powerful enough to do this." Now, what's interesting is, who's the one who actually brought the palace? We continue reading, Surah 27, verse 40. "The one who possessed knowledge from the book said, 'I can bring it to you in the blink of an eye.'" In the literal Arabic, it reads that before the light touches your eye, meaning that this happened faster than the speed of light. So look at this contrast. Again, you have this powerful jinn who had the bronze, yet the one who had knowledge of the book, he was the one who was able to get the job done the fastest, the most efficiently. And this shows that knowledge trumps bronze, that knowledge is more powerful, more useful than sheer strength. And after witnessing this, this is Solomon's response. It says, "This is a blessing from my Lord, whereby he tests me to show whether I am appreciative or unappreciative. Whoever is appreciative for his own good. And if one turns unappreciative, then my Lord is in no need for him most honorable." When we have more knowledge, when we have more information, all that makes us is more responsible. If we have this knowledge, this appreciation, this understanding, and it allows us to appreciate God's blessing, to draw closer to God, then it's going to be for our benefit. But if we use this information incorrectly, then it's going to be for our destruction. And we see this concept of, you know, potentially godly or satanic knowledge based on how someone is using it in the example of Solomon again in Surah 2 verse 102. It says, they pursued what the devils taught concerning Solomon's kingdom. Solomon, however, was not a disbeliever, but the devils were disbelievers. And it says here, they taught the people sorcery and that which was sent down through the two angels of Babel, Harut and Marut. These two did not divulge such knowledge without pointing out, this is a test. You shall not abuse such knowledge. But the people used it in such evil schemes as the breaking up of marriages. They can never harm anyone against the will of God. They thus learn what hurts them, not what benefits them. And they know full well that whoever practices witchcraft will have no share in the hereafter. Miserable indeed is what they sell their souls for, if they only knew. People aim to obtain knowledge. And we have to ask, is the knowledge we're obtaining allowing us to draw closer to God? Are we using it for the good, or are we using it for our own detriment? If we're using it only to increase our wealth, only to increase our status, our ego, our arrogance, then it's going to be to our detriment. But if we're using these things to draw closer to God, to become appreciative, that's real wisdom. And we see this communicated in Surah 31 by Luqman. It reads, we have endowed Luqman with wisdom. You shall be appreciative of God. Whoever is appreciative for his own good. As for those who turn unappreciative, God is in no need praiseworthy. Notice the similarity between this comment and the comment that's made by Solomon, that he realizes knowledge, understanding, that these things, that it allows us to become appreciative of God. But if we learn more and we become unappreciative, we become arrogant, we think that we're better than other people, then we're following the path of Satan. You think about how many people, they have PhDs, they have all kinds of degrees, they have all kinds of knowledge, yet they're staunch disbelievers. They spend their life fighting against the concept of God, against the truth of the hereafter. And they're using all this knowledge that God has bestowed upon them only to further reinforce their place in the bottom pit of hell. So someone who's given knowledge by God's leave, who's given insight in regards to God's creation, how the system operates, you know, the truths of this world, this allows them a great opportunity to draw closer to God. But it's also a huge responsibility, because those who have more are responsible for more. So let's look at another example for where knowledge supersedes that of power and status. In the history of Joseph, we see that he was sold into slavery, and then he was accused of a crime and thrown into prison. So you could say, for all intents and purposes, he was the lowest status within society. Yet what happened when the king had this dream and no one was able to answer what the interpretation of this dream was? In Surah 12, verse 43, we read, the king said, I saw seven fat cows being devoured by seven skinny cows and seven green spikes of wheat and others shriveled. Oh, my elders! Advise me regarding my dream, if you know how to interpret the dreams. You see a parallelism here. You know, in the example of Solomon, he consults his elders for input. We didn't look at it, but the Queen of Sheba, she did the same thing. When she was in the dilemma, she consulted with her elders, and now the king is doing the same thing here. And their response in 1244 is, they said, nonsense dreams. When it comes to the interpretation of dreams, we are not knowledgeable. The one who was saved from the prison said, now that he finally remembered, I can tell you its interpretation, so send me to Joseph. And then we read how Joseph interpreted this dream. And it reads in 1246, says, Joseph, my friend, inform us about the seven fat cows being devoured by seven skinny cows and seven green spikes and the others shriveled. I wish to go back with some information for the people. He, Joseph, said, what you cultivate during the next 7 years, when the time of harvest comes, leave the grains in their spikes except for what you eat. After that, 7 years of drought will come, which will consume most of what you stored for them. After that, a year will come that brings relief for the people, and they will once again press juice. So Joseph interprets the king's dream. And when the king is informed about this, this is what the king's response is in Surah 12, verse 50. It says, the king said, bring him to me. When the messenger came to him, he, Joseph, said, "Go back to your lord and ask him to investigate the women who cut their hands. My lord is fully aware of their schemes." So here, rather than complying with the king's request to come out of jail, he's making demands upon the king. He's telling him, "No, I'm staying here. Go and investigate those women who made that accusation against me. God knows that they are liars." So now the king is at the beck and call of Joseph's demand. He wants Joseph. He wants him to work for him. And what he does is he has to go and investigate the women, and he finds out that, yes, Joseph was truthful. He's vindicated, that he was falsely accused and falsely put into prison. And after the truth became manifest, the king, again, wanted to hire him. And he sends his messengers to go back to Joseph. And it reads in 1254 through 56, says, "The king said, 'Bring him to me so I can hire him to work for me.' When he talked with him, he said, 'Today you have a prominent position with us.'" Now, what's Joseph's response? You know, he says, "Oh, thank you." You know, he realizes he has the upper hand. Not only does he have God on his side, God has bestowed him with knowledge, with information, something that the king desperately wants access to. So Joseph's request to the king, he says, "Make me the treasure, for I'm experienced in this area and knowledgeable." And it continues 1256, "We thus established Joseph on earth, ruling as he wished. We shower mercy upon whomever we will, and we never fail to recompense the righteous." So here we have a slave, ex-convict, straight out of prison, asking to be the most highest ranking individual in all of Egypt. For all intents and purposes, he had more authority and more power than the king himself, despite not having the official title. Why? It's because he controlled the provisions. Who's more powerful? The one who has the title or the one who controls the provisions? In the biblical account in Genesis 41, starting from verse 39, we read, "Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Since God has made all this known to you, there's no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you.' So Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt.' Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in his chariot as second in command, and the people shouted before him, 'Make way!' Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot in all of Egypt.'" So what did Joseph have that the king had to submit to? Was that Joseph had knowledge. God bestowed Joseph with divine knowledge. And because of that, the king was at his mercy. He was looking for him to determine the outcome of how to control the provisions, because this is something that God bestowed upon Joseph. So despite the fact that he lacked the title, despite the fact that he was at the bottom rung of society, he was able to order the king around and have him do his bidding, because he had something that the king desperately wanted, which was knowledge and understanding. And consider this, according to Surah 12, verse 37, Joseph says, "If any food is provided to you, I can inform you about it before you receive it. This is some of the knowledge bestowed upon me by my Lord." He's saying that he's able to determine the outcome of provisions, who's going to receive provisions, who's going to have a lack of provisions. And that's the reason that he was able to understand the king's dream and properly interpret it. But someone who has that ability, how many people would use that ability strictly for the sake of improving their own life, to making their status higher, to gaining more provisions and hoarding for themselves? But how did Joseph use this gift? He used it to save the people of Egypt and his family, who were going to face a famine. That he was able to use this gift that God has offered him, the superpower he has, for the benefit of other people. Today we live in the information age. We have access to endless amounts of information, endless amounts of knowledge. And how are we using that knowledge? Are we only looking at how we can increase our bank accounts, how we can increase our status? Are we looking how we can use this knowledge to better the lives of other people, to do righteous works, to be able to draw closer to God, to remind people of the multitude of reasons they have to be appreciative of their Lord, to not fall into being unappreciative, to not fall into disbelief. Praise God, we have endless amounts of information. Knowledge is at the fingertips of every single individual on this planet. But if we're only looking to see how that knowledge can benefit ourselves, and we're not using it for the betterment of society at large, then we're only going to grow in the status of this world. And this world compared to the hereafter is nothing. We need to be making investments for the hereafter. We need to be growing our bank account of righteousness, because that's something that's going to pay us in this life and in the hereafter. And if we read Surah 58, verse 11, it says, O you who believe, if you're told, please make room, you shall make room for each other to sit. God will then make room for you. If you're asked to get up and move, get up and move. God raises those among you who believe and those who acquire knowledge to higher ranks. God is fully cognizant of everything you do. This shows our priority should not be ourselves. Our priority should be other people. How do we kill our egos and make room for other people to come and sit, to come and hear the message? If we're only thinking about ourselves, thinking about how the knowledge, the understanding can benefit ourselves, we're missing the bigger picture. And that's why it says, God raises those among you who believe and those who acquire knowledge to higher ranks. Because a true believer, as stated in Surah 28, verse 77, it reads, use the provisions bestowed upon you by God to seek the abode of the hereafter without neglecting your share in this world. Be charitable as God has been charitable towards you. Do not keep on corrupting the earth. God does not love the corruptors. If we destroy this earth, we destroy our societies for the benefit of ourselves, we're only digging our own graves. We're only making the environment by which we live more miserable. So despite what wealth you have, despite what status you have, if your society is crumbling, then it's all useless. So God willing, let's be good stewards. Let's be good representatives of God. Let's use the knowledge that God has bestowed upon us to realize, despite the fact that we might not have the status, the title, the impact we can make if we strive in the cause of God, can be astronomical in ways that we can't even imagine. So God willing, we're going to end there. If you guys want to find like-minded individuals, please join us on our Discord server. We have lively discussions, debates, recitation, commemoration, and it's a great way to meet other like-minded submitters. If you want to follow along the verses of the Quran, please download the Quran Study app on the iOS App Store. If you don't have an iOS device, you can go to QuranStudyApp.com website. If you want notes from today's discussion or on other topics, you can check out the QuranTalkBlog.com website. And if you want more regular updates, please follow me on Twitter at TalkQuran. And until next time, peace and God bless.